Right, then we're back in the studio and I've got Eileen Sutherland with me. Good morning, Eileen.
Morning, Yvonne.
You haven't come far today, have you?
No, not very far. Not today. Just from Warkworth.
Oh, Warkworth. Yeah. I wasn't sure whether you were a local person or not, but just tell me about your childhood.
Childhood, yeah, right.
Just a little bit. I mean, you said you're from Newcastle, so you're
yes, actually, it's from Darris Hall. My dad was a builder.
Right.
And this was 1951, you understand. Uh-huh. And he bought some land there. And some people have their births marked by an announcement in the Times.
Mm-hmm.
My dad marked my birth by putting the mixer on the field to build our house. He built houses in Darris Hall, and right. It was before it became terribly well known and very posh.
Uh-huh.
So I lived there. Right. And went to school in Fenham.
So can you identify which are the houses that he built?
Oh, yes, I know them very well.
And have they got a certain style?
Yes, a particular style. Not our house. Ours was quite a tall house, but a lot of the houses he built were, at the time, they were called Dutch bungalows. Bungalows with a sort of dormer window in.
Yeah.
But he put in the first road. Our house is on the rise, but he put in his first road in 1953.
Uh-huh.
Which was Marion Year, and my dad was a Catholic.
All right.
And so he called that road Marion Way after Our Lady.
Ah.
So yes, I know the roads, and he put in Errington Road as well.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. I'll have to go around sometime. A friend of mine lives up there. I'll have to check that out. check your Dutch bungalows out.
Yeah, check.
But it's interesting, right. You know, he's made his mark, hasn't he?
Absolutely. Yeah, yeah. He'll have a real legacy there. Uh-huh. Yeah. Yes. Yeah,
and I would imagine if it was the 1950s, there would be red brick. Were there?
Yes, uh-huh. Mostly red brick,
so they'll stay around for a while.
I think so, and quite a bit of glass, which was unusual at the time, you know, big picture windows and things.
And did he have an architect that worked with him at the time, or was he just sort of...
He did. Uh-huh. I can't remember the guy's name. I remember he lived on Middle Drive, but I can't remember his name, actually, but Dad worked very closely with him, yeah.
So you went to school in Fenham, and was that a happy time for you?
Lovely, yes, I really liked it. I went from five... right up to 18, at the Sacred Heart.
Mm-hmm. Was that an all-girls school?
The primary wasn't, it was co-ed, but then the grammar, it was a grammar at the time, was all girls, yeah. Mm-hmm. In fact, still is all girls.
Yeah.
The Sacred Heart, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Did you do O-levels?
Oh, I did O-levels,
have you heard about the...
Oh, I've been listening to Mr. Gove's, feelings about it.
Yes. I talked to my kids, over the years, I've talked them about the O-levels, because I always say, I got some O-levels. What are O-levels, Mum? And now they'll find out because they'll come back.
They may do, I think.
Certain subjects, I think they're talking about putting them back in. But it sort of ages you when you say you did your O-levels.
Absolutely,
A certain time. I think it must have been early, late 70s when they sort of finished them, wasn't it?
Or early 80s? I think so. Yeah, I think late 70s, early 80s.
But anyway, you did them.
I did them.
And then what did you do when you were 18 then? Did you go off just to...
I went to teacher training college in Northumberland.
All right. In Alnwick?
No, it was in Ponteland.
Oh, that's right. We did have one then.
But the first year, if you did English, which I did, was in Hexham.
Right.
So I spent the first year in Hexham and years 2 and 3 in Ponteland.
Mm-hmm. And did you go on to teach?
I went on to teach for a while at Walker and at West Enton.
Mm-hmm.
And then we moved south to a little village called Langham in Rutland.
All right.
And I set up a patchwork dressmaking business with my friend.
Quite different.
Quite different. So we did that. We had children by then.
Mm-hmm.
And then my husband and I moved to London.
Mm-hmm.
And I started working in a sort of enterprise culture scene in Islington. It was Thatcher's
mm-hmm.
time.
Mm-hmm.
She brought out the enterprise allowance.
Yep.
It was an awful lot of start your own business courses.
Mm-hmm.
And I managed a project that taught people how to set up a business.
All right. So it was still, in a way, you were teaching, training, you're using your skills from what you'd learned years and years ago. Yeah?
Yes, it brought together the teaching and the self-employment from the patchwork dresses.
Mm-hmm. How did the dresses work? Was it quite successful? Or?
Well, it was actually. It wasn't bad. We had a lot of outworkers. I think what we didn't know at the time was how to organise quality control. I think.
Right.
So we always got a bit panicky when we collected the dresses in, and they weren't quite right, they weren't quite ready, but they were due to be delivered the next day. But yeah, it worked all right. We sold the mail order through The Guardian.
Mm-hmm.
We sold them on market stalls and things like that. So, mm-hmm.
I mean, patchwork was an era, again,
absolutely,
wasn't it?
Yeah,
that was. What would that be in the 70s?
Yeah, uh-huh. Yeah, it would be in the 70s, yeah,
uh-huh.
late 70s.
Yeah. And I suppose times change and things move on with fashions as well. Do you remember the big sleeves at one point
yes.
and the loon pants?
That's right, I remember the loons very well. Yeah,
they were good. So you obviously went down to London. You had your children by that time.
Yeah.
And did you start writing then?
No, I didn't start writing. We came back up to Newcastle around about the late 80s, I think. We mm-hmm. lived in Hexham. And I worked at Sunderland Uni and Durham University Business School mm-hmm. and so on. No, I didn't start writing until 2004, other uh-huh. than report writing.
Right,
We have three children, and our middle child was a boy called Matt. And Matt was a teacher as well, and he died when he was 26 mm. in 2003.
Mm-hmm.
And after Matt died, I didn't feel I could go back to work very well. I was in my early 50s then.
Mm-hmm.
And I started going to writing classes with my niece, actually, as a sort of thing to do, really, mm-hmm. a thing to occupy me. And mm-hmm. I felt that I wanted to put something down on paper about Matt. And mm-hmm. My background had all been business, so I wasn't very used to creative writing, if mm-hmm. you like, and expressing my feelings.
Mm-hmm. But you'd done some English. You'd done English at...
I'd done English, yes. Mm-hmm. I taught a bit of English and, done plenty of report writing. But it's not the same. It's not the mm-hmm. same as expressing, being able to express what's in your heart, mm-hmm. exactly. So mm-hmm. So I started going to some writing classes in 2004.
Were they local then?
Yeah, and it used to be the Centre for Lifelong Learning at Newcastle Uni.
All right.
And the women who were at that group now are in a group called Carte Blanche. They formed their own group.
Mm-hmm.
And we meet every Thursday.
So you still do that?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Right.
Just off Northumberland Street at Brunswick Church.
Uh-huh, yeah.
Yeah. And I go to the Anik Writers Group, actually, here
right,
in the Playhouse.
Yeah. Yeah. And do the people that go, are they all sorts of different backgrounds, are they?
Oh, yes, all sorts of walks of life, yeah, completely. It's very, very interesting to have people
mm-hmm.
With lots of different backgrounds and lots of, it makes it very rich.
Mm-hmm. And probably lots of different reasons for writing.
I'm sure. Uh-huh. I think so. Yes, mm-hmm. I think that's right.
Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, I think what I wanted to know from you really was obviously the thing that inspired you to write was to talk about Matt from your heart and put him into some form of a book or
that's
whatever.
Right. Yeah.
But it didn't quite work like that, did it? From what I can gather.
Well, not really. I didn't really start with the idea of writing a book. I did a lot of poetry actually, which I sort of found unexpected, really. Mm-hmm. I didn't think that was...
It came
quite,
to you.
Quite me, yes. Mm-hmm. But I really enjoyed writing that. That felt as if it encapsulated what I wanted to say, mm-hmm. what I felt. And it was 3 years after Matt died that my husband was still working, and he felt... He had a very responsible job, and he felt just... It was time for him to stop. And mm-hmm. we had always said we would do a long bike ride when we retired.
This was why when you retired?
Well, I don't know really. It was just
never happened before. That
would have been the time for it. My husband always was a keen cyclist, and so was Matt. I was a sort of fair weather cyclist. I'd done the sea to sea after a big struggle and a lot of shouting, And so we decided we'd do this bike ride, and we'd bought a derelict property in Bulgaria before Matt died, and again that was going to be a retirement project.
Mm-hmm.
But we brought that forward, and I sort of project managed the renovation of that.
Mm-hmm. I've seen it on the website. It looks lovely. It looks lovely. Uh-huh.
And so we had somewhere to go to, if mm-hmm. you like, really. So we thought, okay, we're gonna do this. We're gonna mm-hmm. sell up. We're gonna go to Bulgaria, and we're gonna cycle there.
Oh.
So we started off on this bike ride.
Uh-huh.
And
had you sold up by that time?
We'd sold in Gosforth by that time, mm-hmm. and we'd bought a static caravan on the coast at Warkworth here.
All right.
To come back to for holidays uh-huh. and for as a base for our children and grandchildren.
So that's how it worked.
So off we went.
When was that? 2006. And did you? Where did you actually go from? When you set off on your bikes, was it a grand thing or did you just slip away?
We just slipped away. We went to my mum's in Wallsend mm-hmm. and stayed with her for the night. And mm-hmm. then we cycled from Wallsend to the ferry.
Mm-hmm.
which is about 4 miles. And I insisted that we had 2 hours to spare to cycle the 4 miles. Alan felt we'd do it in a quicker time, but I thought he was completely wrong. Mm-hmm. So we'd have the 2 hours to cycle. Mm-hmm. Took us 35 minutes, I think, and so we were waiting for
the whip.
Ferry. No, it wasn't. It wasn't very far.
It's quite flat as well, isn't it, Ryan?
Well, there is Rose Hill, Yvonne.
Oh,
I'd like
sorry,
to tell you
sorry.
About Rose Hill.
I haven't heard of that one.
So you can... Just quite high.
All right.
But apart from that, yeah, it's really flat. Uh-huh. And it was very easy. And he was absolutely right. And we had to spend ages waiting for the ferry.
Hanging around.
Yeah.
Well, but you didn't know that.
I didn't.
So it's always the anxious time. And absolutely. What did your other children think of this then? Did they think you were mad?
I think they thought we were quite crackers, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. My husband wrote a blog. So they sort of knew where we were and what we were doing.
So you had to carry your computer?
No, we just called in at internet.
Oh, right, of course, yeah, you can do that. Yeah.
And they came out to join us in Budapest.
Right.
For a few days. Uh-huh. So we sort of saw them halfway through.
Yeah. So without spoiling the book, because obviously the book is called Changing Gear, and that's a good title. I can think it's got a bit of a back to that, hasn't it? It's not just straightforward. It's a bike and it's your life change and change of things that have happened to you. So without sort of spoiling where you went, but how long did it take you? Obviously took it over to Amsterdam, did you?
Yes, to Amuden, yes.
And then you were
from there.
Away.
Uh-huh. Yeah. We
how
went
far?
Through, it was 1,951 miles.
Oh, was your bottom sore?
Approximately.
Was your bottom sore?
Oh, my bottom was sore, but we had padded shorts, so that was essential. Yeah.
Uh-huh, yeah. Yeah. And how long did it take you?
Well, we were cycling for 59 days, but 49 of those were we're away for 59 days, but 49 of those were actually cycling days.
Yes.
Because we had some breaks and we had the time with the girls in Hungary and, we had the odd day off when we're exhausted or when I was exhausted.
Yeah.
And
were you fit before you went then?
Not in the least.
No, because I thought I'd read that, because you look fit now, obviously.
Kind.
No, you do look fit. So obviously before that, you eventually got fitter as you got to Bulgaria, did you? Is that how it
worked? Yes, that's really how it worked, yes. Mm-hmm. I wasn't fit at all. My husband was, and he said, you know, how about doing some training? And I said, it'll be fine.
Mm-hmm.
And then,
boring training.
Boring training, yeah. And I have a bit of a dodgy knee anyhow from an accident I had when I was younger.
Oh, did you? So you went on a dodgy knee as well as a... Uh-huh.
But fortunately, he carried most of the stuff. Mm-hmm. I had a little bit to carry.
Mm-hmm.
And
panniers in the back.
Yeah, and so there was quite a lot of shouting and crying for the first 2 weeks until I got a lot fitter. And then it was great. Cycling, you know, it can be quite meditative when you're cycling along because there's only you. Mm-hmm. And, you know, can listen to music and things, which we both did sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
But it gave us both time to think about Matt. We didn't want this to sort of degenerate into a scamper across Europe, really. Mm-hmm. We wanted to have something extra there.
Mm-hmm.
But we weren't prepared for what it would be like. So, yes, some days I think were really difficult.
Mm-hmm.
Some days were absolutely uplifting because the weather was beautiful. You felt it was almost, I think I remember saying to Alan, I know now why people do extreme sports.
Huh?
And he said, well, you can't actually call this an extreme sport.
Maybe extreme for you.
Everything's relative, exactly.
It
was extreme for me. And I think people do extreme sports sometimes, you know, to get closer to God or spirit or source or whatever you like to call it. And I think on those uplifting days when things were going well and the weather is beautiful and so on, you're very close to nature, it can be quite a healing thing. I found that very helpful.
Yeah. I suppose it took you away from your normal surroundings as well.
Yes.
Because you're out of place, weren't you?
That's
right. It wasn't your place anymore. So
yeah.
I suppose your mind does change to focus on different things.
Completely. And when you're up, it's great, and it's great to be in that place where you have no other responsibilities and you're quite free.
Mm-hmm.
On the days when you're not, it's really difficult because all you want is familiarity.
All right,
and you want to curl up somewhere that you know with people you know.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I think it was a time of extremes.
I suppose you did have Alan there that he was your, the pair of you, suppose you support each other.
Yes.
I mean, this is the bit where you say in the book or somewhere in the book, as we got on our bikes, I experienced an intense sense of freedom, a fraying of the cord of sadness. I felt light and irresponsible, with few possessions to worry about and a sense of space stretching ahead. Anything seemed possible.
Yes, it did feel like that as we got on the boat, actually. And I think, yeah, if you've had a lifetime of working, responsible things, and looking after your children and so on, and, you know, if you're conscientious and so on, it's quite a shock to be
irresponsible.
Almost cast adrift and irresponsible. And there's a certain charm to that. I think I'm warming to being irresponsible, actually.
Maybe that's what happens to people. At a certain age, you get to that point where they just kick off their shoes and that's it. Some people do that, but not everybody can actually make that break. You may be nearly there, aren't you?
Well, it could be. I could be just on the brink, Yvonne.
Just on the brink of something.
Just a little pusher.
Right, so we've talked a little bit about the book, and what I wanted to ask you is, sort of, people on the way, did you meet many people? I mean, language, was that a problem at all? Because you were cutting across a few different barriers of language, weren't you? Are you?
Absolutely. No, neither of us is a linguist. We spent a lot of time doing charades, miming and learning the odd word, but we managed to get by. But yes, it is tricky in some countries. I mean, sometimes we're lucky because people speak English.
Yes.
But we did meet a lot of people along the way, sort of, you know, incidentally, for a short time. But we'd met a couple, Glenn and Emma, for a long time. And that was very nice. We met them in Germany. They were cycling from Manchester to India.
Ah, right.
He was raising money for ActionAid, I think, and she was raising money for Macmillan Nurses.
Right.
And we met them in Germany for the first time, and we were cycling along, decided we'd cycle along together, and we sort of lost them because he had a puncture, and we all got lost, and so we lost them again in Germany. And then in Slovakia, we just got to Slovakia, just over the bridge from Vienna, and it's a big concrete bridge with turns in it, and Alan was ahead of me, and I heard him speaking to somebody. When I stopped, it was Glenn and Emma. So from Slovakia onwards, we cycled with them through Slovakia, Hungary, and they left in Hungary. That's right. Because they had to go to Croatia to meet somebody, and we were going on to Serbia. And then they came and visited us in Hodnica Bulgaria later on.
On a different year or a different just?
Later on in their cycle ride.
Cycle. So they were still going when you had stopped at that point.
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
And were they the only English people that you met?
I can't quite remember. They're the only ones that stick in my mind. I think we met a lot of people who spoke some English.
But they weren't necessarily English.
But we didn't actually spend a lot of time with anybody. You'd meet them for a couple of days or something.
Pass
like
through.
That. That's right, yeah.
But a good way to meet people.
It was really good, yeah.
Like-minded, and obviously, it's what people want to bring to the thing, is that they've got different reasons for being there, haven't they?
That's right, and it's funny, you actually find almost a cycling community, especially in Germany. Germany is such a big country, and the campsites are very well organised in Germany, and so are the cycle paths, unlike some other countries.
It's haphazard, are they?
That's right, and so we would end up at a campsite somewhere in Germany, meet some people, and then 3 or 4 days later at another campsite in Germany, and those people would be there again. So we sort of kept bumping into people like that, particularly through Germany.
So did your husband have a tent on his back?
He had a tent on the panniers on the back of the he was carrying the tent too. I think I carried the pans, actually, I'd like to say that. Perhaps a kettle, but I don't know.
To weigh you down.
But we had the tent until Budapest, and then we sent it back with one of our daughters, because the part going through Serbia and Bulgaria, camping wasn't very well established in both those countries at that time. I think it's more now.
Did you go bed and breakfast then?
Yes, sort of little hotels and things like that,
And in that, I suppose, it was quite ad hoc, was it?
Oh, completely, yes.
Ahead. You just wherever you ended up that day, you thought about it.
Hope for the best,
I suppose you take your chance, but then, you know, life's a bit of a chance, isn't it?
Well, it was all about taking a chance, really, and we were taking a risk, so we sort of always felt we'd find somewhere, I think, mm-hmm. for the night, and we always did. So, yeah, my big fear was wild camping, which I wouldn't have liked, but we didn't have to do that. When you're not in a campsite, you just camp by the side of the road. I would hate that.
Yeah.
My husband was very keen to do that.
Was he?
Yeah. Happily, we didn't have to.
I think that's a boy thing, isn't it?
I think it's a boy thing.
They like to get under canvas and not worry too much. Of course, it's different for them. They don't need any sort of...
hair dryers or
stuff. Yes, I don't get it. So you got there and you stayed... Did you stay in Bulgaria for a little while?
Yes, we stayed in Hotnitsa, actually only for a few weeks because we had some events to come back to here. Mm-hmm. But then we went back again and mm-hmm. stayed there. On and off, I always came back about every 2 months for a short while throughout the following year, 18 months, that sort of thing. And we came back for holidays and things.
Mm-hmm. So you came back to walk with?
Yes, came back to, or to visit friends, you know, mm-hmm. that sort of thing, mm-hmm. Or relatives. Mm-hmm. Then in 2008, our youngest daughter and her partner came out to live with us for a year. Mm. And we built a straw bale house.
I saw that was being developed on the pictures that I saw. Uh-huh.
Yeah, I think probably part of my dad's genes. I just wanted to build something. So so we really had a fun year doing that. So that was really
the project
nice.
Then.
Yeah, that was really nice.
And at what point did you put your words to paper for the trip?
Well, on the trip, every night we wrote a diary each. Mm-hmm. And Alan also wrote the blog, which was fantastic. And so by the end of the trip, I had a record of it mm-hmm. all, if you like, in note form.
Mm-hmm. Quite descriptive, I would imagine. Quite a lot of detail, was there?
Some, not too much, but some, enough for me to remember, mm-hmm. you know. So then I wrote it up and it was more like a report, really. Mm-hmm. sort of let it sort of sit for a while. Mm-hmm. And then the more writing classes I went to, the more... different techniques I learned, and I went to one particular one which taught me about dialogue, mm-hmm. and that was a big breakthrough for me.
All right.
There's quite a lot of dialogue in the book, mm-hmm. and I suddenly found, that's the way I like to write, actually. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So it was a process, really.
Mm-hmm. I did read the front page, or the front thing. It said something, it must have been when you were getting on. Never mind, he said, we're on a flat bit now.
Yes, I know.
Yeah, because it does start off pretty well. It does start off with dialogue, which is good in a book, I think, because it gets you immediately into the characters. And I know you're not characters as such.
Yes,
you are real people.
Are, yes.
But it's still
it's a way in, isn't it?
Yeah,
which is good.
But books can be dry. You've got to sometimes work at them. But I felt immediately I could have got into that.
That's good.
And I will.
That's good.
So then you start to write the book, and that was, you were still living there though. You're still living in
between
Bulgaria.
The two, really. Yeah, mm-hmm. between the two, coming mm-hmm. and going. You know. Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah.
And at what point did it take you all that? These 4 or 5 years to actually write it?
It did, really. I mean, I didn't do it all the time, you know. Mm-hmm. I had sort of phases on it.
Dipping
and
I'd
put
and
it
out.
Away and mm-hmm. then have another phase and put it away and so on. But it was last summer, when I thought, okay, this is it. And I want to finish this. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't. We were over here and I just couldn't finish it. And I ended up getting the train to Berwick and staying in a lovely B&B there for about 4 days mm-hmm. and just writing the last 12,000 words.
No distraction.
And that was it, mm-hmm. yeah, and it was finished. Mm-hmm. And then since then, of course, there have been various editings and stuff mm-hmm. going on mm-hmm. with it.
Who published it then?
Self-published. Oh. I had two offers, one from Austin Macaulay, which is a national publisher,
right, uh-huh.
but they wanted me to pay a bit towards the print, mm-hmm. and it looked to me as if I was going to get a very little percentage back. Return per uh-huh. book. Yeah. And I couldn't see that they had a marketing strategy. So mm-hmm. I thought, well, I can't see what's good about that. Mm-hmm. And Brian Lister, my friend who runs Biscuit Publishing, who's a great guy, did offer as well. But it was just timing. I just wanted to get it finished. And mm-hmm. by the time, you know, Biscuit would have done it, it would have taken a bit longer. Mm-hmm. So I said, thanks very much. And he's been a great help to me. Mm-hmm. But
who actually edited it for you then?
My husband edits.
All right.
And,
is that his job?
No, but he does do a lot of copywriting.
Right.
So, you know, he's particularly good at that. Mm-hmm. So he edits, I've edited. Mm-hmm. I think we've still got mistakes in this, but I've only got 100 printed at this stage, mm-hmm. Just to see what will happen.
Yeah.
And I wanted to put it on the Kindle as well.
Uh-huh.
And with the Kindle, this is National Bike Week this week.
Yes, you did say
and,
that.
So in honour of that, on the Kindle, mm-hmm. for Saturday, Sunday and Monday, I put my book on for free. You can do that. You can have a little promotion.
Uh-huh.
And there have been 1,600 downloads.
Wow.
In England and, well, in the UK.
That must make you feel really good, doesn't it? How do they know about
Germany
it?
And France.
Is it because of the bike week?
Just because it's, you know, when you do your download, Kindle do a little promotion for you anyhow.
Oh.
So that sort of helps you along.
Uh-huh.
And I did some tweeting and some emailing of bike groups.
Of course. Good. Yeah. I think that was your strategy then, get to the people that were going to read
that's
it.
That's right, because I thought, well, you know, there's got to be a way of doing this.
Uh-huh.
And so that's one way of doing it.
Uh-huh. Very good. Well, that's hats off to you because, you know, there's big companies do it. And sometimes you just know your audience, don't you? Yourself.
Well, I think there's that, and I think there's for this one, I think it's two genres. I think it's the cycling,
mm-hmm.
but there's the other genre as well, which is bereavement.
Mm-hmm.
And when Matt died, we went to the Compassionate Friends group, which mm-hmm. is an international group, but with a local base here in Newcastle. And they were such a help to us. They were mm-hmm. fantastic. And they had a library of books of people written by people who'd lost their children.
Mm-hmm.
And I found those invaluable.
Right.
And I'm hoping that this will be helpful for
other people. Mm-hmm.
And a copy of this will go in the Compassionate Friends Library.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'll go and speak about it.
Uh-huh. Good. Yeah. Well, that's another string to your bow. And if you can help people to come to terms with things and just put it your way, that must help.
To demonstrate, I think, probably that there are different ways of coping. I'm mm-hmm. not saying that this is the end of coping, this mm-hmm. is the way you do it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm saying this is a process.
Mm-hmm. Just
and,
part of it.
You know, people may be interested in that process in the way that I was interested in others' processes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I've got Eileen Sutherland in the studio with me. She's written a book called Changing Gear, and we've been talking about the history of it, why she wrote it, and she's obviously given us some insight into the background of it. And sort of finally, because we're really actually running out of time here, it's amazing how you can just talk for a while, isn't
Absolutely.
It?
Absolutely.
The book was it a book signing that you did? No, it wasn't really.
I did do some signing, yeah, because it came out on the Kindle about 3 or 4 weeks ago.
Right. Uh-huh.
And I only picked up the hard copies on Tuesday in time for the signing
mm-hmm.
at the Coca Tea Rooms in Amble.
Yes, because we did read out a little bit about this because you'd got in touch with us.
Yes.
So we tried to push it a bit, and you had it was nice the way you had a picture of a bike on it and everything. It made it stand out.
Good.
So that was on Wednesday evening, was it?
So Wednesday evening, and we had late afternoon tea. Stephanie, who owns the tea rooms, provided fantastic afternoon tea and a glass of bubbly and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And I did some readings from the book mm-hmm. and some signing.
Yes.
It was really fun evening, yeah.
Uh-huh.
It was really nice. Yeah.
And did you know most of the people there? Was it?
Yes, there were a few I didn't, but mm-hmm. most people I did know. Yeah.
Yeah. And you just mentioned to me while that track was on that you've signed up with Kindle, and it's because it's Bike Week. You've got something special on there?
This week is National Bike Week.
Mm-hmm.
And when you put your book on the Kindle, there's a particular thing you can sign up to called Kindle Direct Publishing Select.
Mm-hmm.
And you're allowed to put on your book as a promotional thing. You're allowed to make your book free of charge for 5 days.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I chose to do it for 3 days,
mm-hmm.
Last Saturday, Sunday and Monday, sort of to commemorate National Bike Week.
Mm-hmm.
So I put it on free for those 3 days, and I tweeted a little bit. I'm just learning how to tweet, I have to say.
Yeah.
And emailed some bike groups and things like that. And it's ended up that there were, over those 3 days, 1,600 people downloaded Changing Gear.
That's amazing.
So I was just flabbergasted. They're predominantly in the UK, but a whole lot in the States, a few in Germany, and I think 7 in France.
Uh-huh. Amazing.
So that was fantastic, actually, uh-huh. yeah.
That must have made you really feel good about what you'd done, because at least you know
yes.
people are actually going to read it. They're not going to download it and not read it.
Well, I suppose not, no. And so that's a bit even more scary, you know, because you... I don't know about other people, other authors, but for me, it was all about writing the book and then about seeing it done and having it finished. Mm-hmm. And I didn't actually think about people reading it. Do you know what I mean? Oh, I wanted right. people to read it, uh-huh. sort of, but I didn't expect people to really do yeah. it.
Yeah. So it was more for you. You did it kind yes. of for you, kind of for your yeah. family and for Matt.
Yes, but, it was for my family, yeah.
yeah. yeah. But now that other people are going to read it, that's even...
Well, I think, you know, there's something about, you know, one of the things when you lose a child is that you really want him to be remembered. You don't want him to be forgotten. Mm-hmm. And I think anything you can do to make sure that he's not forgotten. Mm-hmm. It's a good thing.
Yeah.
And I think this book, that was partly the motivation for mm-hmm. this book.
Yeah. Really. It's a good motivation. It's a good one. I mean, your dad left you with a legacy of his buildings.
Yes.
He said that he's obviously built houses in Ponteland. And you're going to leave, you know, your family with Matt in the book. He'll never be forgotten, but you know he definitely yes. won't be in his book.
That's right. Book. Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
I mean, I'll just tell the readers what your dedication is. And you say, in 2003, when you died in Nepal, Dad and I were grief-stricken. Trying to cope, we did unusual things. One was to cycle to Bulgaria. This book is about our journey, and I hope you like it, Mum. Kiss at the bottom. That's nice.
That's right.
That's
yes,
a lovely thing.
It's a little dedication to Matt, yeah. Mm-hmm,
yeah. yeah. So just rounding it up, and I've had Tamsin, whose programme this is.
All right, yeah.
She says, how's it going? Bruce was good last night. I rocked out just a bit. Please can I request Prince, When Doves Cry, or Bruce Springsteen's Born to Run? You're going to have it. Actually, Tamsin, we're running out of time here. You know what I'm like. I do talk a bit. But anyway, it's been lovely to have you in the studio.
Really nice. Thank
I hope you. The book goes well, and thank you for bringing a copy, and I will read it because I'm going to take it on my holidays with me, and I'll you know, I know it's like I said earlier, the review that somebody said was you know, it's sad but it's funny, so you've
I
got
hope
a
so.
Bit of both.
There's a fine line, I think, between despair and humour,
uh-huh,
and
yeah.
It's surprising how many times you cross that line.
Yes,
yeah,
uh-huh.
So I hope people will get something from it.
Uh-huh, yeah, and a bit of fun is
I hope
everything.
So. Yeah. I hope so.
Okay, well, thank you very much for that, and good luck to you.
Thanks very much.